Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics, from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today.
The next thing I want to talk about is the escalation clause. I think Matt always says strictly for live men, not for freshmen. You know, an escalation clause basically means that you go and you see a property and you put an offer in on it. And in the event that someone outbids me, the price will incrementally go up. what's the downside behind this? How do you know the owner is not just telling you that somebody else put an offer in just to raise your price? How do you know that it's not the owner's cousin or somebody else? So it kind of leaves you in a vulnerable situation. But this is something that you would do if you just had to have this property and you're willing to go a little higher than it typically would sell for. I've used in my 20 plus years, I've used an escalation clause only one time. And the reason why I used an escalation clause was I already owned two buildings that were right next to each other, and I was trying to acquire the third. So I did not want to risk not getting that property. So at that point, I put the escalation clause up that I would pay $10,000 more than any other offer. I ended up paying about $40,000 more. I ended up paying $40,000 more for the property because they came back like three times talking about, oh yeah, we got another offer and we got another offer and yada, yada, yada. Like, could they have been pulling my chain? Yes. But on a $1 million property, $40,000 is really not that big of a deal in your mortgage. And especially if it means having three properties in a row, which makes managing much, much easier and stuff like that. So whenever you put an escalation clause, also keep in mind that you really need to have a tight contract together and make sure that the offer, you're clear on what you're willing to do, what you're not willing to do, what kind of proof needs to be provided, you know, because it's just like one of the things you have to include in the contract is that that the offer has to come from an agent and they have to list who the agent is, right? So now it's just, if somebody wants to play a game, it's just more lying that they have to do and more people that they have to get involved. And it also gives you more opportunity to smell something funny if need be. All right. Any questions on this one?
There was a question in the chat, but I think you kind of answered it. Jay said, are they not obligated to disclose a higher bidder when it comes to escalation clause? But I guess it's something you could put in there, right?
Yes. That's something like, depending on how you write it, like if you're off, you don't have to let the other buyers know that you have a escalation clause, but they have to let you know, depending on how you write it.
Jasmine in the chat says, so is adding an escalation helpful in getting the contract given the risk?
It is helpful. It does increase your likelihood of getting the deal done because the seller knows that you're for real and you're definitely going to end up with it. It's just how much you're going to pay for it. You just don't know. Mm-hmm. So again, I would only go with this strategy in the event that this is a must have property for you.
Right. Cause it kind of locks you into having to pay this higher price, right?
It locks you in. And another way that, you know, you can get a deal done is by the mentality of putting a larger down payment in down. So typically people put 10% down, right? And whether you put 10% down, 20% down, 50% down, or 100% down, the deal does not close, does not fund until it closes. So with that being said, it doesn't really matter how much you put down, because you're still at the same, you're at the same risk. Now to the seller, the more money you put down, it shows your conviction to the deal. It shows that you are, that you have the financial wherewithal to get the deal done, and that you're super serious, you know? The downside is that you lose access to your money for no reason. So if 10% down on $1 million deal, $100,000 would have gotten the deal done. I mean, is the basic that people typically do, but you say, I'm going to put, you know, 25%, which is $250,000. That's the extra $150,000 that you don't have for 60 days while this is all coming to fruition. Again, all of these are things that must be taken into consideration, and you really have to know what you're doing to make sure this is what you want to do. All right. Any questions on this one?
I don't see any hands. Nope.
All right, cool. Next thing you want to do, if you want to get your offer accepted, make the deal as clean as possible. Minimize your contingencies. Like, you don't want to say stuff like, oh, I'm going to buy this house. If I sell my house, and depending on what the bank says, and I have to get my contractor in here first to see what he has to say about this wall over here, because I'm, you know, a seller's not trying to hear all that. You know, what a seller wants to hear is, hey, I want to buy this house, $150,000, this, that, the other, I'll close in 30 days, blah, blah, blah. As clean as possible. You know, the one of the things that you could do is waive all contingencies to make to make it more attractive to the seller. You know, no concessions. No, well, I need you to do this for me at closing and give me some money back and this, that. The more complicated and convoluted your deal is, the better it is for me when I come in there and be like, yo, here's my money. Let's get this popped in. 30 days from now, we close. And another thing, this is something that you got to keep in the back of your mind. Even though you waive like your mortgage contingency or inspection contingency or financing contingencies, have to keep in the back of your mind that makes sure that this will appraise. Like it's a game of chess. Like, you say, oh, I'm willing to take this whether it appraises or not. That's what you say, but you have to look at the property and know what you're talking about and know that I'm only saying that because I know it's going to appraise. You know, you have to say that I'm willing to take this property with no inspection contingency. That must mean that you have some general knowledge of structural and buildings that you can walk through the house and see that there's nothing major that might be sneaking up on you. Like you say you're taking it with no contingencies, but before you say you're taking it with no contingencies, make sure that you wouldn't have an issue with that in the first place. Did I say that properly? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, makes sense. Like, don't waive it if that's not something that you know about. If you need a professional in there to actually inspect the place, then don't say you're cool without having an inspection, because you don't really know what you're getting into. That's how I understand it.
Exactly. And the same thing is like, no, it doesn't matter if it appraises or not. So the only time you say it doesn't matter if it appraises or not, if you know it's worth $500,000, and you're getting it for $400,000. So you make it sound like you're giving them something, but you're not really giving them anything.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Cause you know, for sure, based on your homework or whatever, that it's going to appraise higher. So that doesn't need to be a contingency, and added hurdle that might look like an added hurdle in the contract, I guess.
Exactly.